Barb Giamanco helps innovative mid-size and enterprise companies build lead generation programs that improve sales results. To learn more, visit scs-connect.com.
You're listening to Women in Sales, a podcast dedicated to becoming the best resource in the world for female sales professionals. Here's your host, Barb Giamanco.
Today, my guest and I are going to talk about when sales opportunities don't go as expected. Never happens in sales, right? I mean, come on, it's happened to all of us, and it's likely that there were signals or things maybe that we missed along the way, but that doesn't mean you still can't pull out a win. Before I introduce my guest, let me thank our elite sponsor, Microsoft. I thank Gabriella Schuster, Corporate Vice President and Channel Chief at Microsoft, for her dedication to supporting women in technology and making this podcast possible. Gabriella and Microsoft are committed to giving young women better role models and a stronger voice to all women. You can hear more from Gabriella and other Microsoft leaders on the Microsoft Partner Network podcast on iTunes. All right, my guest today is Mary Lombardo. She is the founder of Absolute Impact Corporation, a positioning and professional sales development firm that helps startup and mid-sized companies increase profits through custom-designed sales solutions. Mary's got extensive background in sales, and she has served in executive-level leadership and management roles her entire career, generating revenues from $14 to $60 million that led her to win the coveted title Salesperson of the Year in 2008 and 2009. She joined the Millionaire Dollar Club in 2007, so clearly has some experience with selling successfully. Mary spearheaded and landed a colossal level win while in her role as strategic partner and leader for Evans Newton, included a $5 million sale for district-wide whole school reform programs that produced double-digit corporate profits. So Mary, welcome to the program.
Barb, thank you so much for having me. I'm very thrilled to be here.
Absolutely. Very impressive sales background. So I'm glad to have the opportunity to talk to you today. So I like to ask all of my guests, Mary, how did they get started in a career in sales? So what's your story? How did that happen for you?
Sure. So, you know, Barb, I think sales chose me. You know, I'm of the mindset that salespeople are born. I remember taking a career assessment in high school, and the results came back with this clear green graph showing, you know, sales as my natural vocation. And I thought, you know, I held a lot of stereotypical views about sales and salespeople, and I thought, honestly, the results came back wrong. So I just decided to ignore that, and I went out into the world and started working and working in jobs for several months. And I would find that I would start making silly, like really silly mistakes. And I would do this. There was a pattern of this very silly mistakes over and over and over again in several different positions. And what I realized was that I was completely bored and I just wasn't connected to the work. The routine was very painful. And for me to have to be in an office or any other situation from 8 to 4 or 9 to 5, it just doesn't work for me. It's very excruciating. I would think to myself, I can get this work done in an hour. So why do I have to sit here all day? And, you know, I can economize on my time. I have a really high sense of closure. So having to be in a building just for the sake of being there, especially when my work was done, it just made no sense. And I wanted to move on to the next thing. I have, you know, I needed a lot of mental stimulation. So for me, one of the best things about me getting into sales was that I could dictate my own time. And sales, for me, offered me variety and stimulation. It's very exciting. It's never boring. It allowed me to meet people from different places and different industries at different levels of society. And I love travel. So I could be in LA for lunch and I could be in New Orleans for dinner. And I remember many times looking out at the clouds on a plane and thinking, wow, this is fantastic. This is my office. And sales also, you know, gave me a sense of accomplishment because there's a lot that goes into sale, and getting people to agree to a vision is quite an accomplishment. And it's not just a matter of, you know, getting paid or getting the big win. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I love making money. But for me, it was about variety. It was about control over my own finances. It was about providing people with easier ways to do things and solve problems in their lives.
Excellent. Well, we have some things in common. I'm not a 9-to-5 gal either.
And I
was in one of those kinds of jobs before I fell into technology sales, but there was a reason for everything, because while working in this accounting office for a petrochemical firm, they bought their first IBM mainframe, and I figured out how to run all the reports. It's when I also saw what commission checks these guys were making, and I said, hang on a second, you know, I would be getting my work done early, but I'd see one of my peers just stringing it out, no urgency, no desire to get it done quickly. They were just going to string out that 8 hours a day. So totally relate to what you're saying. Now, our topic today, I think, is a really good one, because sales opportunities often don't go as expected. We think we know, and then sometimes situations pop up and kind of surprise us. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So the first question I have for you, Mary, is tell me about a time when you felt like you absolutely had the sale in the bag, the champagne, you know, the cork was popped, and then all of a sudden you find out you lost to a competitor. What happened?
Oh gosh. Yeah. So these were the early days of sales. And, you know, of course, nothing is ever completely perfect in any sales situation, but you know, these were some of the huge mistakes I made early on. And so I realized this quickly, that I had not sold the vision of my solution. And it really just, it wasn't strong enough, and neither were my unique capabilities. So the school districts, at this time I was working with school districts across the country, they started to view my competitor as less expensive. And so I was working with these school districts, and these were multi-million dollar, multi-year contracts. And specifically in a district here in the Chicago metro area, I met with the superintendent, and she had certain goals that she had to make to keep her contract. And it was a very high poverty, high minority, low functioning school district. She needed to increase student achievement. Well, my solution, I was convinced this was going to fix her problem. And so she said, fine. We took it to the board, and the board said, hold on here. This is sole sourcing. We want to see other vendors. We want to see what other people have to offer. And that was a very hard lesson to learn, that I needed to go back and I had to get every single person in that institution involved in the sale. There was no me. There was no I. I thought it was all about me, and I was going to come in and rescue everything and save the day. This was about managing a whole institution and compelling people to think differently, to first find out specifically what it is that they were dealing with, and, you know, who are the players and what are the politics and whose job is on the line, and what's this going to cost? What's working? What's not working? And why isn't it working? I had done none of the legwork. And so, of course, the easy out was, no, you know, a company is offering this for $1 million less. So I left myself vulnerable without doing the work.
Mm. Well, and a couple of good points there. So many people espouse the idea, Mary, that it's important to sell to the C-suite. And I don't disagree with that.
Right.
That being said, you sold to the top one executive, though other people were clearly going to be involved in the decision-making process.
Correct.
And you hadn't sold them on the idea, because this is one of the things we need to remember. Now, CEB has said that it's something like, I don't even remember the number anymore, 7.2 people involved in a buying decision. The more complex, the more complex, the more expensive, you're going to have other people who are part of this. And so I think it is important to have a relationship with the executives, absolutely, without question. And as you said, very appropriately, we need to also make sure that we're developing that relationship with the other influencers. The second and maybe most important piece that I picked up from what you were just talking about in your story, Mary, is that when you don't sell the vision and you don't sell the value, all of a sudden you become a commodity and people default right to price.
Absolutely. That is exactly correct.
Yeah. And so whenever people come to me and they say, Barb, I'm having trouble with X, Y, and Z, you know, I always am fond of saying it's never about the price. And truth is, it is. Price matters. Don't get me wrong. It's just that if you get into a selling situation and somebody automatically wants to go to price, there are some steps that have probably been missed. I don't know about you, Mary, probably from your experience you learned, whenever somebody, even in the early stages of a conversation, starts asking about price, I don't go there.
Correct.
Right? I want to make sure that I understand their issues, their problems, the challenges, and start really working on value, because if you go right to price, you've got nowhere else to go. So that's really tough. Building on that, building on this idea of money, have you ever gotten yourself into a situation where you get to the end of the sales cycle, you think it's all ready to go, and then the prospect says, sorry, Mary, it's just too expensive. We can't afford it.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, this is a default response. And as you said, Barb, you know, this may or may not be true. It might be too expensive, but, you know, I think it's, you know, it's a default response to just get me out of their office. You know, my initial response to that is, what's too expensive? I mean, most people resist change, in my opinion. And so when I show up at someone's office, I'm asking them to do just that. And, in order to, you know, avoid this, it's too expensive response, I need a lot more information. I need to know, again, you know, the problems, the players, the politics, the initiatives. And because if I give random pricing without fully understanding the intricacies of the business, the conversation's over. You know, they're not invested. So I have to create a solution with a buyer that's on board with my unique capabilities. So I think everything goes back to unique capabilities as the differentiator, because again, as you also said, it will then become about price. If it's not, you know, if there aren't unique capabilities, you know, is what I'm offering addressing the problem, and what's it worth to them to solve the problem? You know, in order to circumvent that, you know, I have to sit side by side with the client and get to know the issue. And I tell them up front, this situation is going to require change. And I ask some questions that would hopefully open up, you know, a thought-provoking dialogue, like, you know, why now? Why isn't this working? And how much would it cost for you to do this with X company? And how many times do you need to implement this before it becomes cost effective? But the most compelling question that I ask during this type of a conversation is, what alternatives do you have? So it really becomes more about digging deep into what's really going on, as opposed to this is too expensive and I'm too fearful of change and I really just don't want to do this. Or going back to those IT gentlemen that you talked about at your first company, they'll just kind of string it along. So I can tell you that by doing this type of discovery, if you will, I did have a very successful situation in a school district, also in the Chicago metro area, where I created an entire backward design model. So here's the goals. Where's the vision? Where's the ideal vision? The ideal vision is you need to be at, you know, 25% of increased student achievement by the end of next school year. And so bringing in all of the players, all of the stakeholders, the board members, the teachers, the building principals, the staff, to really disaggregate and break apart and unpack everything that's happening in that institution to come up with a plan with benchmarks that we mutually agree to. And that continues to deepen the commitment when they're mutual decisions that are mutually agreed upon. And so the short of this was a $5 million contract that was unanimously passed by the board over 3 years. But, you know, the due diligence needs to happen. It's not a It's not a, this is what I have, please sign my contract kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think, unfortunately, many sellers go into it with that sort of an idea, and they do forget that often, especially if it's going to be an expensive purchase, there's a lot more that goes into it. Also, do you find that in the beginning, Mary, it's helpful to at least, you know, suss out a little bit whether or not they're prepared to allocate money to this, and do they, you know, and do they have, you know, is there some burning desire, something that has to happen in order for them to go through the pain of making the change?
Yes. And so really it's about finding, you know, for lack of a better term, finding the bleeding.
Yeah.
You know, what is it that is, why am I even sitting in your office? What's happening here? So if I'm working B2B and this company has hit a plateau in sales and they need to increase sales, you know, their business plan, 5-year trajectory is that they're going to make $50 million next year and they're only at 10 million. Where's the disconnect? How did that happen? Was there new leadership that came in? Did new investors come in? Did they have high turnover in staff? Are their systems, defunct or antiquated? So, and to your point about money, do they have the money? Because I have certainly gotten into situations where I made assumptions and I learned very early on after very painful lessons, I can't make assumptions about money. I can't assume because, you know, Coca-Cola is a Fortune 100 company that they have millions of dollars to invest because they just might not.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this reminds me of a saying that I heard from a friend of mine a long time ago who I interviewed. And he said, the only thing better than getting to a fast yes is getting to a fast no. Because if you're going to put a lot of time and energy into working with these organizations and help to start craft a solution and you want to close business, you need to at least have some understanding of whether or not they have money and they're really willing to do what it takes to make the change. Because some people will sit. I've heard it said that status quo is our biggest competitor, and that's certainly the case.
Absolutely.
Right. So we have to see what we can do to mitigate that. All right. So here's another question for you. And I love this one. This has happened to me. We all learn from experience. This has definitely happened to me. And then when I have sat back and, you know, evaluated, I know what went wrong. So here's the question for you. How do you avoid a situation when, where you've gotten through the sales cycle, you presented the proposal, and all of a sudden your prospect says, well, Mary, thank you so much. Now I need to take this to the boss. We'll get back to you.
Yes. And I know that you can relate to this.
Every salesperson has had it happen. Yes.
Yes. No authority over resources.
Yeah.
That's what that's called. Mm-hmm. That person is very nice. They've been very congenial. They've been very welcoming, but they cannot sign the check. And so, you know, there's a lot of people in institutions and roles and responsibilities. And it's really up to the salesperson to decide where these people fit into the conversation, but there's only a certain amount of information that I would share with what I would call a sponsor. So this would be a sponsor of, now I need to take it up to my boss. So if they truly are a sponsor, they really want to see the implementation or the service or the product come in, but they just don't have any signing authority. So, this is where the salesperson needs to maintain the control of that process, because if as a salesperson, and I have done this as a salesperson, we just say, okay, here, you take this to your boss and I'll call you next week. That's done. That conversation is over. That will never, ever come back to light. So to be able to avoid this, I have tried to retain control by asking, you know, like, what's the process to get this done? Or would it be a good idea for you and I to meet with the committee next Tuesday? Or would it be a good idea for you and I to talk to your boss? I want to make sure that he or she, you know, has all of his or her needs met. And who else needs to get involved in the decision-making process? So all of the information up to a pre-proposal review, I would share with a sponsor. But other than that, I need more access. So what I'm looking for is that sponsor to give me higher access and not give them the proposal and say, here's this woman, Mary, she's really nice, and this is what it costs. It costs $1 million.
Right.
You know, yeah.
Because nobody internally is ever going to be able to sell you better than
Correct.
You and your
Correct.
Solution. And so I've definitely had that happen. And that has then caused me to realize, and this is exactly why you need to be sure that you're finding a way
yep.
to meet with that decision maker ahead of time. But even if you get to this stage and it says, and the prospect says, I need to take it to the boss, I would do just what you did, Mary. And sometimes they'll say yes, other times they push back.
Right.
But you know, it'd be like, hey, I don't want to put you in an awkward situation where
right.
you might have to answer questions that you're not, you know, you're not as well versed in. So
sure.
let me help you with that. Right. And I'll join you on the call. But sometimes they say, eh, and then, you know, you live and you learn. All right. So a final question before I start wrapping up our program today,
yep.
Mary.
Yep.
So what about what happens when the sale basically gets stuck? I mean, everything
yeah.
seems like it's gone well, but your proposal is hanging out there. And as you said, when we talked earlier before the interview, it's aging like fine wine.
Correct.
Right? So
only it's not as sweet.
It's not as sweet. No, not at all. So what's going on? How did that happen?
So what I think happens is because the salesperson is relying on intangibles. Mm. So that's my opinion and certainly has been my experience. And so, as you said, we live and we learn through this whole sales process. And, you know, closing a sale requires the ability to, you know, create strong relationships and have really strong people skills, but it also requires a logical and methodical process of timelines and responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And by creating this, it continues to reinforce the furtherance of the agreement. So we have to, I think, create a timeline. So using the Coca-Cola example. So you need to be at $50 million, Mr. or Miss CEO, by next year, and you are at $10 million. So my services or solutions are going to get you there. But in order for us to start, that means we have to get to your investors. Why don't we put that on the calendar for next week? That means we need to get your other CEOs or COOs involved. Well, let's get that on the calendar for the following week. And so we create this backward timeline, if you will, that says now we got to get the attorneys involved. Let's do that next week. I need to get your purchasing department involved. I can do that March 2nd. So it's very kind. Will that work? That doesn't work. Okay. Well, what about this date? What about March 5th? Does that work? Creating this tangible, again, mutually agreed upon timeline will further their commitment, because as they're nodding and agreeing, they're saying, yes, we're moving forward. Yes, we're moving forward. Yes, we're moving forward.
Well, and I think that's really smart, because you do want to make sure that you're gaining the next commitment. And by the way, as while I'm thinking about it, one of the things that I stopped doing years ago, Mary, you may do the same, but once I have a sales conversation with the appropriate people and I put a proposal together, I never send the proposal back over email. I always make sure we have a call scheduled, and I will yep. send that proposal a few minutes before the call, because I want to walk them through this. And I think a lot of people make a big mistake when they do that. Have you seen that happen as well?
Oh my gosh, Barb, every single time.
Yeah.
And I couldn't agree with you more, because if that person has it in front of them, I don't know, even an hour beforehand, they're going to start skimming through it and they're going to start picking things apart that they really may not have a full understanding of.
Exactly. That's exactly
yeah.
it. And that's why basically my strategy would be, you know, we'd have the call set up, and as I'm dialing into the conference call and people are calling in, I'm literally sending it over
yeah.
email right then. But then, you know, I'm using it to walk them, talk them through it and show it to them and all that sort of thing. So I think your advice about making sure that you're gaining that next commitment, because I also think the strategy you just described by getting those dates on the calendar and such, if they're not willing to move forward, they're not going to agree to those things.
Correct.
Right?
That's
and so that's going to
absolutely correct.
And that's
yep.
going to tell you right then and there whether or not you have a real opportunity or you have kind of a fake opportunity.
Yes. And what I really need to go back and rework.
Right, exactly.
You know, because if they're hesitant, I've missed something or someone along the way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, this has been such a great discussion because all of us make mistakes.
Yeah.
We're human beings. We make mistakes. The important thing about being successful over the long haul in selling, though, like most things in life, I believe, is we need to be willing to step back. Takes a little bit of self-awareness, but take a look and say, what could I have done a little bit differently? What did I miss? What signal was there that I just absolutely didn't pick up on? What questions did I not ask and who did I not talk to as you started with your very first story? So I really appreciate you joining me today to talk about what happens when opportunities don't go expected, because it's going to happen.
It is going to happen. And this has been my absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for the opportunity to share.
You bet. Well, so tell people how they can get connected with you, Mary, learn more about your business, etc.
Oh, great. So I am happy to help any sales teams. My company is Absolute Impact Corporation, and we provide sales training to individuals and sales organizations that are customized to the specific needs of the marketplace, as I was just chatting about. My website is www.absoluteimpactcorp.com. Or you can just reach me at mary@absoluteimpactcorp.com.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. And I imagine they can find you on LinkedIn, yes?
They most certainly can, yes. I am on LinkedIn, and you can certainly find me there. And my additional contact information is there as well.
All right, fantastic. And as always in the blog post, I will include links back to Mary's site as well as her LinkedIn profile. So again, thank you so much, Mary, for joining me today. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Barb. You have a good day.
I will. I want to thank everyone for listening. I've been talking to Mary Lombardo. She is the founder of Absolute Impact Corporation. Visit her on the web at absoluteimpactcorp.com and find her on LinkedIn. As I said, I'll include links in the show notes. Once again, thanks to our elite sponsor, Microsoft. I thank Gabriella Schuster, Corporate Vice President and Channel Chief at Microsoft, for her dedication to supporting women in technology and helping to make this podcast possible. I hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. And until next time, happy selling.
You've been listening to Women in Sales. To ensure that you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.